Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, we start with the news that at least six people have been killed following an Israeli airstrike on a medical centre in Beirut overnight. Those strikes are likely to continue today because the Israeli military warned residents of several villages in southern Lebanon not to return to their homes. And then in Israel, the IDF said that more than 200 rockets were fired towards the north of the country from Lebanon. Let's speak to BBC Security correspondent Frank Gardner. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Claire.
And thank you very much for joining us. You've been writing that this is now one of the most dangerous moments for the entire region. So can you give us your assessment of things as they stand?
Okay, so you've really got kind of three conflict zones going on at the same time. Gaza hasn't stopped, but it rumbles on. There are still Israeli airstrikes a few days ago. Dozens of Palestinians were killed there. In Lebanon, Israel's incursion is deep, or invasion rather, is deepening. And they took eight fatalities, in the last couple of days, which I think is probably going to shock Israelis. This is not going to be a quick and easy special military operation. It's an invasion, and there's going to be a casualties on both sides. But the thing that is really frightening people, this is why I say it's such a dangerous moment, is that if you remember a few days ago, Iran hit out at Israel with 180 missiles, mostly ballistic missiles. Now, these are really serious bits of kit, which if they land on a civilian area, they would have caused a lot of casualties. Not all of them were shot down. Some of them penetrated Israel's air defenses. So Israel has vowed what it calls a heavy response and saying that Iran will pay a heavy price. Now, some people, the United States included, are calling for restraint, and the UN, I think it was in your headlines there, but Israel is in no mood to listen to calls for restraint. So there are a number of different ways that it could hit back at Iran. They could hit its oil export terminal in the Gulf at Kharg Island. It could even, some are suggesting, go after Iran's nuclear research sites. In which case, whatever it does, Iran is going to hit back. And it could start spreading by hitting back at U.S. bases right across the region, Kuwait, UAE, Qatar, etc. So this is a very dangerous moment in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. And you have gone through in great detail in that piece that I mentioned earlier what Israel might do. And you mentioned some of the potential targets there, conventional military, economic targets. But the biggest concern, as you say, would be if they made the decision to attack the nuclear facilities in Iran. Now, have we any way of telling what Israel might do next?
Not really. They're keeping it very close to their chest, and they are coordinating very closely with the Americans, because they know that, well, for a start, they probably need U.S. satellite intelligence input. The U.S. has said it won't take part in any Israeli any Israeli attack on a nuclear facility. At the moment, Israel is closed for Rosh Hashanah, which is the Jewish New Year, and that ends in about 36 hours, roughly. So it's unlikely, but not impossible, that we will see something before then. But I think this weekend, our time, is the most likely time for an Israeli response. And the Israelis feel they need to show a deterrent. Lots of people in the region are saying, please don't make this any worse. The last time this happened in April, President Biden said to Israel, look, we helped you shoot down all those 300 drones and missiles that were incoming. Take the win. And Israel retaliated with a very minor symbolic hit on a radar outpost near Isfahan. But this time it's different. The Israelis are really spooked by the power and strength and capability of some of these Shahed 3 ballistic missiles that took only 12 minutes for Iran to fire from their land base to hit mm-hmm. Israel.
So that's where the real power lies with Iran, because you say that their air force is old and decrepit and their air defences aren't up to much either.
That's exactly right. But there's a lot of ways that they could make trouble. They've got a huge arsenal of ballistic missiles, which is one of the reasons why President Trump when he was president, pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal, saying that it didn't include Iran's ballistic missiles. So they got a lot of these. They, if they chose to punish America's Gulf Arab allies, they could make a huge amount of damage in the Gulf. They could try to close the Strait of Hormuz by sowing mines, driving up the oil price. They could attack boats and shipping in the Gulf. They've got a lot of fast patrol boats. They could even do a swarm attack on a U.S. Navy warship using a lot of torpedo boats and drones. They could hit desalination plants, power plants, oil export terminals, all up and down the Gulf. So there's a lot of mischief they could make. And frankly, everything now rests on how Israel responds, on how heavily it hits Iran.
Okay, Frank, if you can stay with us, because we do have Leila Malala Allen, special correspondent with PBS NewsHour, joining us now from Beirut. Leila, thank you for being with us this morning. I see from your social media post that you were at the site of last night's airstrike in central Beirut. This was a medical centre. Tell us what you saw there.
It was. There were several strikes last night, but two of them were in central Beirut, outside of the southern Hezbollah-run suburbs, where we've been seeing a lot of the strikes over the last 2 days. And this one, the site that I went to, was in Bashura. This is less than half a mile from the Lebanese parliament, from Western embassies, from the very center of Beirut. So that's got people really spooked. Now, this was a medical center. It was for civil defense first responders. It was, they had their pharmacy there, they had their response center there, they had a medical trauma unit there. Now, this civil defense unit is affiliated with Hezbollah, but what's important to point out here is that Hezbollah is a government as well as a military group. They are part of the government here. They run social services. These civil defense volunteers respond to everyone in the city, not just people in Hezbollah-run areas. They are medical workers. So if medical workers are now becoming military targets of Israel's strikes, that extends potentially into all sorts of civilian infrastructure. We've already seen residential buildings being felled, hundreds of civilians being killed. Now, seven of these civil defense workers already have died. There are several more severely injured. When I went to the site this morning, it was incredibly tense. Everybody there really in disbelief that medical workers could be hit in this way. There was a very sad memorial with their helmets piled up and the Lebanese flag memorial to them, and people in panic as well, but at a time when there are constant strikes going on and they need every medical worker, every medical unit, every civil defense worker they can have, that they're now a target as well. So real tension and huge destruction of this building, two entire floors taken out.
Leila, your line is breaking up a little bit, but we'll keep going because it's understandable given where you are and what's happening there. Are people still flowing into the city from further south? And if so, what's the humanitarian situation like?
People are still flying to the city. So I'm actually not in Beirut now. I was in Beirut this morning. I'm in Saida, which is a southern city on the coast. And it's where a lot of the people from the south are coming up. One of the reasons that my line is breaking up is because there's lots of signal jamming going on here. The networks keep falling out, the phone networks, the internet networks. Everyone are obviously very scared about communications devices ever since those strikes on pagers and walkie-talkies a couple of weeks ago. So they're using jammers to try and stop strikes, to try and stop people being able to find out where certain people are. But of course, that means people who are being attacked are finding it very difficult to communicate. So I'm in the main government hospital in Saida, and here it's a place where they bring a lot of the injured from the south because it's a safer place where they can be operated on. We've got people coming from Tyre, from all the villages south of the Litani. There was an alert sent out by the Israeli military yesterday that they were going to be targeting everything south of the Litani. So this is the place where they bring them. But even now, there have been some strikes on Saida too. And people are very concerned as they watch these airstrikes spread further and further up the coast, as well as now potentially more Israeli ground incursions too. There are over 1.2 million people now displaced within Lebanon. That's in a population of 5 million. So more than 20% of the population. And the country is already in disarray. So the government is not able to help these people. There are some shelters that have been started by local charities, but really many, many thousands of people sleeping on the streets, feeding themselves with whatever locals come and give to them.
And then in the south of Lebanon, as you mentioned, Israel's ground invasion continues. What's the latest, Leila, from there that you're hearing?
So we had three nights ago now, the first of these ground incursions. At the time, everybody was terrified as they saw Israeli troops come over the border that this was going to be a repeat of 2006, that a full war had been launched. The IDF then quickly made a statement saying these will be limited ground raids on villages on the border that they feel Hezbollah has the capacity to launch attacks from. Currently, that's all still that's happened. That first night, they didn't meet much resistance. But then the second night when they came in, yesterday morning early, they started to come in, and a unit of IDF soldiers came through and were immediately ambushed by Hezbollah fighters. Eight of those soldiers were killed and many more injured, and there was an immediate air evacuation from the border. So fear and humiliation amongst Israeli troops about perhaps what they felt might have been a much easier entrance into Lebanon, that may lead the IDF to recalculate. And as many people have been saying in the security calculations here, airstrikes from Israel, that's an easy option for them. They're able to keep their troops mostly safe, and they're able to try and take out Hezbollah facilities, although they are killing many civilians at the same time. As soon as they have troops engaging on the ground, that's a completely different calculation, because they're losing then Israeli citizens. The population will start to get concerned about whether this is really worth it. And it's a much, much more intensive engagement. So now I imagine the conversations today after Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made a speech about those losses last night will be, is it worth trying to push back in after such destruction of their troops on the first day that they tried to?
Leila, many thanks for joining us from Lebanon. Leila Mulana Allen there, and back to Frank Gardner there. I mean, when you hear Leila's description of what's happening, you wonder whether Israel can maintain this military presence on so many different fronts, Frank.
Yeah, well, they have withdrawn quite a few troops from from Gaza. So their 98th Division, they've moved it after 3 months of fighting in Gaza, they've moved them up to Lebanon. But just listening to Leila, this has echoes not just of 2006, but of Israel's 18-year occupation of Lebanon from 1982 to 2000. And Ireland is well placed to know about this, because Ireland provides troops for the UN peacekeeping force, their UNIFIL, the United Nations interim force in Lebanon. So they observe what is going on and are first-hand witnesses to what happens in South Lebanon. And it's an unhappy place, because at the end of 2006, there was a UN resolution that was supposed to keep Hezbollah north of the Litani River, which is about 30 kilometers north of the border. But they didn't stay north of there. They stayed south and built up this huge arsenal of rockets and missiles. And the day after the October the 7th raid into southern Israel by Hamas, out of solidarity, Hezbollah started firing rockets into northern Israel. And that's been going on for 11 months. So finally, Israel said, we're going to do something about it. But, you know, Leila's absolutely right. Airstrikes alone don't work. And they're also a very blunt instrument. They end up killing a lot of civilians. You know, the death toll in Lebanon is already over 1,000, which is not far short of what it was in 34 days of fighting in 2006. And back then, I was covering it from Jerusalem. And I remember the Israeli Air Force commander saying, we've got this. We can do this from the air. And you can't. In the end, you've got to go in on the ground with infantry. And Hezbollah have said, bring it on. This is the fight that we want, because we know the ground, we know the territory, we know the ambush routes. So they are almost saying, we welcome an Israeli invasion, because then we can take them on rather than being hit from the air.
Well, Frank, thank you very much for joining us. And you mentioned our UNIFIL troops, Frank, and we've had a statement in from our own defence forces here reconfirming that all defence forces personnel, Irish defence forces personnel, are currently safe and accounted for. They continue to maintain a high level of vigilance and monitor the developing situation in their respective mission areas. And that is so important for the families of those 350 or so troops who are based there in that very dangerous situation. That was Frank Gardner, and earlier Leila Mulana Allen. We will take a break back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.